I said, oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire.
Shout out Santiago.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
It's 5 o'clock. Congratulations. Hopefully you're off work. And luckily for you, old dirty show. And we had to go to the bullpen and grab the righty. Chris Santiago steps in for the final hour. As T-Mill, who's done a great job as he always does, had to step out. And Chris Santiago coming out of the bullpen, picking things up. We appreciate you jumping in. And the latest is, it is Football Friday, and I'm going to make you clap it up again as we are live here in Sugarland at Talyards, and it is a good time. Reggie is out here playing Flavor Flav in the building, and you can meet Reggie from In the Loop right there. Say hello to Reggie and do your thing and enjoy yourself as it is a Football Friday, and we are live in Sugarland at Talyards. We've had a great time here, just as we did the previous week we were here, week one. It's a great spot, a hidden gem that shouldn't be hidden anymore. Bring your kids, bring your family, come on out. It is a great, great time, and we're having a great time. And you still have the opportunity to win prizes, including Texans tickets, coming up a little bit later on in this hour. So if you are on your way or you are in the building and you have not put your name in our raffle box, you may want to do that so you have a chance to win those tickets. All right, Clint, as it is a Football Friday, let's start, though, with the Astros. This is the biggest series in the regular season, Clint, that I've seen the Astros have. They usually have either wrapped it up or getting close to wrapping things up. Now, both them and the Mariners are 84-69. They sit atop the AL West, and really, Clint, with nine games to go, the winner of this series is in the driver's seat the rest of the way. And good news coming off of this, Clint, Isak Paredes, who had been injured since July 19th after suffering a severe right hamstring strain, he is back, reinstated, and, Clint, he is immediately back in the lineup in the three spot. That is huge, but overall, Clint, this is a must-win series for the Astros, at least in terms of winning the division.
Yeah, look, I mean, if you want to have a shot to win the division, this is definitely a must-win to put yourself in the driver's seat. They do have the Colorado Rockies and I believe the Dodgers. You got the Angels and the A's. So there, yeah. You know, you could catch a half a game or a game there and down the stretch, but you'd rather not have to depend on that. You'd rather just take care of business right here. It's the beauty of this head-to-head matchup in the division this late in the season. And you got to take full advantage of it, man. Luckily, the Astros, they're not matching level of hotness that the Mariners are, winning nine of their last 10 or eight of their last nine, whatever it is. But the Astros are hot. They're on a little streak themselves with winning three from the Texas Rangers, creating a little bit of distance between themselves and the Rangers, even doing the Mariners a favor, if you will, and sweeping the Rangers, you know, in this last series. So this should be a hell of a matchup. The Astros, although you don't have Yordan Alvarez, you do get the bat you mentioned back in the middle of it, which is Isak Paredes. And so you're not putting your best foot forward, but you're putting a really good one. So, yeah, I'm excited about this one, Ron. And the way that Joe Espada lined this thing up,
yep,
so that the Mariners catch the Astros' top three pitchers in Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez, and Jason Alexander, you catch those three guys, you're definitely catching. I mean, you're definitely giving the Mariners your best shot, and so the team is in a position where if they're going to be able to win this thing, they got their best chance with the best guys available.
And listen, man, Isak Paredes, this is huge to bring him back, and Clint, they're not easy, man, easing him into it, right? He's going right into the three hole in an important spot in the lineup, or a run producing spot in the lineup, so they obviously expect him to be ready to go, which is interesting. I agree with you, as you said earlier. Like I don't even has he had a rehab start? I don't even know if he's had a rehab start. He is coming right in the biggest series of the year, and he's hitting third. But even with that, Clint, this to me is about your big players, your Altuves, your Correas, your Peñas. Hunter Brown, who's on the mound tonight. Framber Valdez, who is on the mound tomorrow. Brian Abreu, your stars have to step up. Your experience has to come through. And that's why, to me, I give the Astros an edge in this series.
I give the Astros a huge edge. I mean, one, that's what this organization has been about for the last 10-plus years. I mean, the big moments, the clutch gene, the chemistry in the clubhouse. I mean, the Astros are elite in all of the above. And so I expect that from Carlos Correa. I expect it from Altuve. I expect that you mentioned Pena and the whole crew. The one guy you left off, Chris Walker, hell, I put him right in that mix. I mean, Christian Walker, Chris Walker, like he's the old Arkansas
basketball
player.
I think some people call him that, though. No.
Nah, he definitely goes by Christian, but he's definitely a Christian, right? But, yeah, I put him in that category, too. He's been on a big stage. You know, he's a veteran.
He's played in the World Series, yeah.
Yeah, man, this has got to be a moment for him as well. And I'll be honest with you, I fully expect it. I fully expect it to go in the Astros' favor simply because of that. I do think the Mariners have put a hell of a team together over there, but I think you Astros are catching them at home in that clutch gene and putting, again, having your biggest guns on the mound. I think the Astros win this one.
Again, Seattle's going with Brian Wu, who was an all-star for them, 14-7, 3.02 ERA, arguably their best pitcher this season. And then Hunter Brown, the Astros' ace. He gets the ball. We all know what he has done this year. Smack dab in the Cy Young Award. The lineup, the full lineup. We told you Paredes is batting third. Pena, Correa in front of him. Behind him, Altuve's playing second base. Cole behind him. And then Diaz, Christian Walker a little lower in the lineup than maybe expected in the seventh spot. Sanchez and then Jake Myers is in center field and in the nine hole. So that is the lineup tonight for this huge, important series against the Mariners.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, Clint, the Texans injury report is out. Also, the Jags injury report is out. By the way, we haven't talked a lot about the Jags. The Jags, they don't have their starting offensive guard, Ezra Cleveland. He has missed practice multiple times this week. Today was the first time he's returned to practice. He is listed as questionable. He is their starting guard. His backup, he is listed as out in this game. So it's very important for the Jags to see if Ezra Cleveland can go in this game today or tomorrow or Sunday, excuse me. But that is the only person really to look at on the injured list. For the Texans, Jalen Smith is the only one that is listed as out with a hamstring issue. Everybody else, Jake Andrews, Braxton Berrios, Christian Kirk, Kamari Lassiter, Jalen Petrie, Daryl Taylor, all that were on the injury report, they were full participants, and they are good to go in this series. So Jalen Smith, the only injury, real injury concern that's out in this series for the Texans. I mean, in this game for the Texans against the Jags. And I know for you, Jalen Smith, that isn't just he's a rookie. That could be an important thing with, I guess, Tremont Smith being the guy that replaces him if they need him.
Well, I think that they obviously thought higher of the rookie than they did Tremont Smith. So, you know, this guy just bounced into the league and as a rookie this year, and he was never going to get the Kamari Lassiter treatment because Kamari Lassiter's already there, right? You got Derek Stingley Jr., you got Kamari Lassiter. I think he was drafted because they felt like they needed some depth at corner, and they needed, honestly, I think they needed the weapon of being able to go to three cover defenders, knowing that Jalen Petrie's weakness is coverage, knowing that Chauncey that Gardner Johnson is a guy that, yeah, he can do some different things, he can cover some guys, but you don't want to get him mismatched on wide receivers. And so I think the Jalen Smith draft was strategic. I think it was more than just, hey, it's the best player available. I think they needed it, and I think he had pleasantly surprised them to a point where they felt comfortable getting him on the field after week one, where the Rams wide receivers got matched up on Jalen Petrie multiple times and Gardner Johnson multiple times. I think we saw the adjustment by D'Amico Ryans was Smith that cornered Kamari Lassiter inside, even Derek Stingley Jr. following Evans wherever he goes. I don't know that it's going to be as easy this week, Ron, to go to that, to adjust to that without – Jalen Smith. Now, I do think they trust Tremont Smith. I just don't know how much you want to put him in that situation, knowing he's got to play a lot of special teams and knowing that he's – I just don't think he's the player that Smith or I mean, well, I guess they're both Smiths, but Jalen Smith is or obviously the starting two corners. There's a significant gap there.
Because the thought is to kick Kamari Lassiter inside and then have maybe, in this case, Tremont Smith to be the one that plays outside, which he's most, you know, it's his comfortable position, just to avoid the matchups like you had in the first game against the Rams. Because you don't want to see Clint Brian Robinson in the slot, you know, running into Jalen Petrie. You don't want to see, some of their even, you know, Travis Hunter. You don't want to see him in the slot running against, you know, Jalen Petrie or Gardner Johnson. So, and obviously they watch the film, so they're gonna probably try to see if they can run those matchups, and that's the significance of. Just at least the adjustment in that.
Yeah. Well, to simplify it, I mean, if you think about it, all you got to do is go 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, three wide receivers, and all of a sudden you've definitely got Jalen Petrie having to cover one of them, right? Because yep. if they play matchup man, then obviously you decide probably Brian Thomas Jr. is who Stingley covers, and then the second best receiver Kamari catches, and you adjust accordingly. So. Either way it goes, you know, if you're going to play matchup man, you're going to put your third best cover defender, which in this case would be Tremont Smith, on their third best receiver. So all you got to do is get into a three wide receiver personnel group, and you've got the ability to put, to attack, if you will, if that's what you want to do, if you feel like you got the right guy to do it, to attack a Jalen Petrie in coverage, whether it be zone or man. So it's not hard to get to the point where you can go after Jalen Petrie. It's all about what does D'Amico Ryans choose to do. Does he match up man-to-man and let Stingley take Brian Thomas and everything else kind of trickles down? Or does he stick with that zone? As we mentioned earlier, Ron, the reality of it is he can do whatever the hell he wants to. He's played you've seen him play two really good offenses, and they've held them down, for the most part, held them down and played good defense in any style that D'Amico chooses. It's just a simple fact that he doesn't have the adjustment in this game that he has when Smith is healthy.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that injury report there, especially from the Jags side of things. Everybody else for the Texans appear to be a go, including Christian Kirk, who has missed the first two games, Braxton Berrios as well. Ezra Cleveland for the Jags, that's the one to watch ahead of this game on Sunday. He is listed as questionable.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, Clint. NFL officials, they've said they're going to keep a close eye on the false starts, and not just false starts, but also encroachment by the defense on the tush push. Anytime... quotes from the league, anytime we have a situation where short yardage, we know we want to make sure that we can officiate these plays. The offensive team has to be perfect in every aspect. The NFL vice president of officiating, Roman George, said, according to the Post, we want to officiate it tight this week, and we want to be black and white and be as tight as we can when we get into the situation where teams are in bunched positions and we have to officiate them being onside during basically the tush push. So they've come out, said they're going to officiate this thing tight after there were offsides last week and false starts in the game that the Eagles played against the Chiefs. Clint, you think – we haven't really talked about it this much this week. You think we are seeing the end of the tush push? You think this is the last year we see this?
No, I don't think we do. I think it's a football play. It's a legal football play, and I think what we're talking about here – now, they may make tweaks to it, Ron, to where somebody can't push, this guy can't push, this guy can't go in motion. This, you know, they may make adjustments there, but I don't think that the line of scrimmage and the way the offensive line handles and is executing the tush push, I don't think that part of it is ever messed with. I mean, it's people are going to make as much noise as they can around this tush push because the best team in the league ultimately right now is executing it flawlessly, and it's a huge advantage to them. So I think there'll be a lot of noise around it, Ron. I think you got to be really careful of outlawing a play that is, for all intents and purposes, from a rule perspective, is legal, and anybody in the league can do it. It's not like the Eagles are the only team that can do it. Anybody can do it. Anybody can put it in their game plan and call the play and try to execute it. So I think there's going to be a ton of noise. Not surprised there's a ton of noise coming off the back of the heels of the last year's Super Bowl matchup with the Chiefs and the Eagles. But I don't think anything ever comes of it.
I think we'll see. There was a lot of noise this week. I think if they go back this week, right, and we see everything legal, because, Clint, I'll be honest with you, I do think there was some false starts last week, and I also think there was some offsides last week. I think there are guys on the defense with their helmets clearly over the ball. If we get back this week and, you know, everything is legal, like I think most have thought it has been, I agree with you. I don't think that they really change it. If we do get into a situation where we see, you know, more of the guards jumping off or going early, then I think maybe if more noise is created, then you could potentially see something.
They catch it, here's the deal, is if they start, all they can do is officiate it tighter, and if they catch it and it's legit, they can throw the flag. It puts you in a 3rd and 6. It takes a tush-push completely out of the mix, and maybe you minimize the effectiveness of the play by officiating it closer. I've not studied it. I don't know. I would have to see some real evidence, Ron, to see. Not that it has happened. I don't believe that. But I don't know that the tush push is the tush push because they've been allowed.
Yeah, I think they can run early it. And because yeah, I think they can run officiate. It and have success if they weren't. Right? Like I just think if we come another week away from it and there's more noise. And it starts, you know, when stuff starts to build, then that's
who the Eagles got this week.
The Rams. They got the Rams at home this week. So if it starts to build, we'll see. But if they get in there and we look at it and we see and everybody's and everything is legal, I don't know how much bigger of a thing they make of it. All right, as we continue on a Football Friday here, let's look at the key matchups in this game. This is. I think we've kind of talked about it, potentially a must-win game here for the Texans. What are the key matchups? What are the key matchups when the Texans have the ball? What are the key matchups when Jacksonville has the ball? We will discuss that coming up next as we continue live right here on The Drive.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Talyard Brewing in Sugarland, right next to the Sugarland Space Cowboys Ballpark, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right. There we go. A Football Friday is turning into a party right here. By the way, coming up after this segment, if you're on your way, the big prize. If you're here, you have a chance to win some Texans tickets courtesy of our good friends at Houston Ford Dealers. You got a chance to win a pair of Texans tickets. We will do that as soon as this segment is over. So if you have not put your name in our raffle box, you might want to do so to give yourself an opportunity to win a pair of tickets for a later Texans game. So that is going on here. By the way, Talyards, man, this is a great spot. This is the second time we've been here in 3 weeks, and we've enjoyed it beautifully. And I just said, a tour coming up after. A brewery tour coming up right here at Talyards. My man just walked up, let me know. Hey, let them know. Let the people know. And I know they were doing it last time we were here, and I think a lot of people really enjoyed it. So come on out and hang out. Well past 6 o'clock when we get done here, and just pull up and post up and have a good time. All right, Clint, let's look at kind of going in a little bit in depth here in this matchup. And this is an important matchup. We talked about it earlier. As much as a Week 3 game can be a must-win game, this is it for the Texans. The Colts are 2-0, and they're going on the road favored to beat the Tennessee Titans. If you were to somehow drop to 0-3, you'd be not only behind potentially the Colts at 3-0, but also behind the Jags at 2-1 with a loss in the division and the Ravens in 2 weeks. This is a must-win game for the Texans. So, Clint, the importance of this game is big. Let's look at it from the standpoint of when the Texans have the ball first. What for you is the key matchup that you're going to be watching that has a heavy impact in this game?
Yeah, look, I think it's Josh Allen versus Ariante Ursary, right? We saw Josh Allen, ultimately earn, I can't remember if it was Defensive Player of the Week or Player of the Month.
Was.
I can't remember which
it was. It was the week. Yeah, it was the week.
It may have been both if we go back and check, but it was definitely Player of the Week. We saw him do that versus one of the best pass-protecting tackles in the game, Laremy Tunsil. And so, I can't help but think that he's got to be licking his chops knowing that Ariante Ursary, the rookie, is starting at left tackle. And so I think it starts there. Look, I think there's several things that we have to do offensively that have more to do with Nick Caley and C.J. Stroud and the offense and what they try to do, what the game plan looks like. But when you're talking about matchups, when you're talking about one-on-one, like I think there's a lot of times when there's going to be help with a tight end, there's going to be help with a running back. I think there's a lot of times when we're going to slide to Ariante Ursary to take the pressure off of him. But there's no way to avoid for four quarters not having the Josh Allen one-on-one matchup, man-to-man with Ariante Ursary. And I think that is one where, look, Josh Allen can change the game, right? He's a special player when it comes to rushing the passer. Now, we could also sit there and watch Ariante Ursary, the rookie, get the best of him and feel really good about our left tackle and our offensive line moving forward. I think Ariante Ursary is learning and getting better with every single game. This will be a big one for him, knowing really it's going to be a big one for him every week, because I think when it comes to edge rushers, when it comes to defensive ends and outside linebackers that are just, chomping at the bit to get a sack, they're going to choose to go to Ariante Ursary's side over over Titus Howard. So, the best case scenario, our young fella steps up and balls out and proves that he's ready early and can handle it. Worst case scenario, Josh makes a few plays and we got to deal with Josh Allen making NFL player, defensive player of the week again. It was AFC player of the week again. So I think that matchup, Ron, when the Texans have the ball, is one to watch throughout.
And Clint, your thoughts may be different, but isn't this a thing where you're Nick Caley and you're Cole Popovich and your game plan is, I'm not going to allow my rookie third start left tackle Ariante Ursary, second round pick, just prove to me, oh, we'll see if he can handle him. Like, you have got to help him, right? You've got it in whatever ways you have to, whether that's chipping, flat out double teaming him with the tight end, other things, you have to help him. I don't think you can just very much, to me, leave him out on an island. If you're leaving anybody on an island, it's got to be the other side, your veteran Titus Howard. I just think, to me, this has to be a team effort on not allowing Josh Hines Allen to take over this game and not just say, all right, man, we're gonna see if our rookie left tackle can handle it. They got to make sure that Josh doesn't take over the game.
Well, yeah, they got to make sure that they help him, but it's just one more reason. I think the biggest way, there's two ways that Nick Caley can help Ariante Ursary significantly, and that is to throw the football behind the line of scrimmage. Hell, Tua threw more passes behind the line of scrimmage than he threw down the field yesterday, I believe. I think he threw 11 balls behind the line of scrimmage. And right now, until the offensive line gets things figured out of how we're going to protect and how we're going to do it at a better rate, then I think the Texans need to take an obvious approach that some of these other teams, Baker last week against the Texans defense, you look at the way that Tua, and I don't want to by any way, shape, or form necessarily copy what Tua does and what the Miami Dolphins are doing, but when it comes to throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage and committing to it, I think they do it as much as anybody out there, and that helps protect the offensive line, man. If we the more times that we can get the ball in Christian Kirk's hands, Nico Collins' hands, even Jalen Knowles' hands, and look, even Dalton Schultz, the more times that we can do that in a screen fashion behind the line of scrimmage or within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, it takes a tremendous amount of pressure off of the offensive line, and it's going to take a ton of pressure off of Ariante Ursary. If we can do that 10 times, I'm talking about quick game and screen game, if you can do that 10 times, boy, you take a serious load off of Ariante Ursary versus every time you pass the ball, you're sitting back there in the pocket hoping to go through a 3 or 4 progression read or trying to throw the football 20, 25 yards down the field. That's going to be tough on the young fella. So I think the play calling is just important, Ron, as the chipping with the tight ends and the running backs that you mentioned.
All right, and let's go to the other side. When Jacksonville has the ball, what's for you the big matchup over there when Jacksonville has the ball?
Well, I think it's a group, right? I don't think it's one-on-one. I think it's the Texans' interior defensive line. You know, I think they got abused last week, right? I mean, whether it was double-teaming, getting set down at linebacker level and creating all kind of room that way, or it was penetrating, rushing up the field and letting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers linemen just push you wide and create, again, just a ton of room for the ball carrier to operate. Like, that has to be fixed. I think the Texans' interior defensive line versus the Jags' interior offensive line is the matchup. I mean, there's one-on-one matchups, obviously, with Daniil and Will and Stingley and Kamari Lassiter, and you can even get into the Petries and the Gardner-Johnson. But I think when it comes down to it, if the Texans can't stop the run, this is going to be a lot longer season than we ever anticipated, right? The Texans have to stop the run. They're going to see some of the same schemes that I think Tampa threw at them last week. They've got to see some of the same schemes. Then they've got some, quite frankly, they've got some very similar ball carriers and guys that can do the same. Maybe not as quick and twitchy as Bucky Irvin, but definitely guys that can hurt you in the run game. And so I think they've got to get that shored up. The interior defensive line has to play better. And by the way, I have zero doubt that D'Amico Ryans is going to get this tightened up.
That changes the game if a team can run the football the way that the Bucs did consistently. And I think what we talked about yesterday and through the week, if it happens again, then you look at it and you may have a problem. All right, I can look at last week and say, all right, that was a bad week, and maybe you were focused on the run or whatever. But if it kind of happens again and we see this similar to what we saw last week, then now you may have some bigger issues, some bigger things that you got to look at. All right, coming up as we continue our Friday final. The Texans will win if you can text in 713-572-4610, 713-572-4610, or YouTube and Twitch. Give me the reason why the Texans will win on Sunday. We'll do that as we continue right here live on The Drive.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from Talyard Brewing in Sugarland, right next to the Sugarland Space Cowboys Ballpark, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back as we are live here. Hey, man. Hey, Clint, you won't believe it. Oh, Spank's wife won the tickets. She
what?
She got shot out of a cannon.
Oh, that is great, man. I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad my man won. He showed up last week a little late to get there in time. And man, hey, Spank, you deserve it, baby.
Hey, man, I'm telling you, man, it's a dangerous situation being the person chosen to read that last. Those numbers, I feel like people about to come up and beat me up, Clint, when I don't call a ticket.
Oh, it definitely shows fault when they lose.
Hey, I'm not gonna lie to you. Hey, we had a shout out to the lady. She felt like my grandma, man. She came through here. She conned me. She won an Academy Sports and Outdoors gift card, and then somehow she strong armed me into buying her a burger.
Boy, that ain't easy either. She must be strong now.
She did. And she said, now I'm going to need some tickets the next time I come out there. I said, yes, ma'am. It's been a good time out here, though. And still a lot to do out here. A Friday night. We're here till 6 o'clock, a Friday night. And I'm telling you, Talyard is an amazing spot. They're doing a tour afterwards, and you got a little get a little brew as well at the end of that tour. I know they're meeting at 6:15 right outside of the building here, and they'll do a tour, so you could do that when you come up. And, again, as I've said, if you've not been to this place, I was just telling B. Scott, his first time getting here as well, he said, man, I didn't know it looked like this. And he was like, I was like, yeah, man, bring the kids out here, man. My kids are out here. They just ran around out here. All right, y'all, and it's a good time. It's a good time to be had out here. You can have an adult drink. And then let your kids move and run around and do their thing. So come on out to Talyard here in Sugarland, a great spot. I think we're fresh out of the glasses as well. We hooked our first 50 up with our commemorative glasses. Next week, as we are in Katy in Pop Shot. Is that what it's called? Pop Stroke. Pop Stroke. Here, I'll get it right. Pop Stroke in Katy. You can win or not win. You can get our fourth glass. We've done all four shows, and next week, Area 45, you can get a commemorative glass with their faces on them. So it'll be a good time to be had out there. And we've had a great time out here again. Thanks to all the staff here. Shout out to Academy Sports and Outdoors, our Houston Ford dealers as well, Tomball Ford as well, for everything they've done to help us put this together. Shout out to Tia, our promo staff, who always does a great job. Our engineer, Andy, he takes care of us. You know how he does, Clint, so we appreciate it. And appreciate Tyler as well as Chris Santiago holding it down back at the station as they've kept us on the air as well as on YouTube and Twitch. There we go. All right, there it is. Hey, man, they're here. They're requesting, Clint, they're requesting to get their beers poured in the glasses. I now see people out here drinking out of our glasses out here. Well,
that's a beautiful thing, ain't it?
That is absolutely beautiful. It is beautiful. All right. Let's look at this. You can text in 713-572-4610. The Texans will win if they do what? Someone text in, Clint, if they protect C.J. Stroud. Karen, text that in. Karen R., text that in. If they protect C.J. Stroud, they will win. If the Texans play penalty-free football, they will win. Penalty-free football, they will win. I'll start with mine, Clint. If the Texans are able to turn over the Jags, right? If they're able to do that, Trevor Lawrence has thrown three picks in the last two games, and we've watched Trevor over the years. He is definitely someone who, when you watch him play, seems to at least give the other team an opportunity to turn the ball over. I think that'll be big because, Clint, I think this offense hopefully plays better, but I do think they potentially still will have some struggles. And a thing that can really help that, Clint, is short fields. And they haven't really had a lot of those. Even the turnover they had in the Rams game, that was that wasn't a short field. That was turned over in the red zone for the Rams, and they still had to go the length of the field. If they can get some help from their defense, that could be a big thing. So I say that the Texans will win if the defense, who's been really, really good, the one thing they haven't done a lot of, Clint, through these first two games is turn the football over. If they can get them to turn it over, I think that gives them a big chance to win this game.
Oh, it gives them a huge chance. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the style that this defense plays too, Ron, they just, that's blood in the water, man. I mean, when they, yep, it seems like when they turn it over, they come in bunches, right? So, yeah, I think it's, you know, I think that's one of those deals where, boy, if you can do that, you get a real chance to win. I got two, and one of them, I'm going to go with two because one of them is my wild card. One of them I think is going to happen. Look, we just talked about it last segment. I think the Texans are going to win if they can find out a way to stop the run. And I don't mean stop it completely and stonewall it, but if they can not give up damn near 6 yards a carry. And most of which, yeah, is inside the tackles downhill and doesn't consist of any long runs. If they can figure out an answer for that, I think they win. I think they win. They win handily, right? I really do. I think this is a game that the Texans, if the defense plays up to their expectations, I think they win this game. And it, score wise, it may not be one of those like you look at and you go, boy, they just dominated them. But I think as we watch the game, I think Jacksonville is going to have a hard time getting anything going if they can stop the run. Now, that's the one that I have supreme confidence that it's going to happen. I think D'Amico Ryans gets that taken care of. He nips that in the bud, and we keep it moving. Offensively, I think they got to throw – I'm going to put a big number on it, Ron. I think they got to throw at least 8 balls behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's Christian Kirk. I think it's Nico Collins. I think it's some of what you saw last week with Nick Chubb. The screen out of the backfield was really good. It was good both times. It was really good one time. I think Woody Marks was you know, his wasn't behind the line of scrimmage, but it was a back out of the backfield, 3-4 yard, you know, deep when he caught it. But I'm talking behind the line of scrimmage. We're seeing these teams that everybody's throwing the ball behind the line. Last night, I don't think Josh Allen had – he may have had one. I don't think he had any balls that were completed beyond 10 yards down the line, like air yards. The ball didn't, yeah, travel more than 10 yards down the line of scrimmage. Like,
a lot of catch and
they
run,
scored,
yeah,
31 points. So, yeah, I think I'm going with eight balls behind the line of scrimmage offensively.
Eight balls behind the line of scrimmage. Someone text in, Clint. If the Texans can get Nico Collins the ball, they will win. And listen, I am telling you all right now, Clint, I'm going to lose my mind if we come in here Monday on a reaction Monday and we sit up here on Sunday and if we're talking about the same thing, they have struggled to get the ball to Nico Collins. It is just unacceptable. It's unacceptable. We watched the Bengals get the ball to Chase at will repeatedly last week against this very defense. I am completely with the texter. They've got to be able to pull that off. Got to be able to pull that off. That is just something to me that is a requirement. Texans win. Tony in Houston. If they play aggressive, smash mouth football from the get-go. Yeah, I think that is something too on both sides. If they get off to a good start, I think, and a good physical start with this team, that is to me a big deal. That is a big deal, and I don't know that they have been able to do that in the first, really, especially from a defensive side, things in the first two games, if they've gotten off to a great start. So I agree with that. I agree with that. As we get here, Clint, this is a huge game. Tyler gave his prediction here. He said Texans win 24-20, as he believes they will get off this losing streak, and they really have to. To me, this is a different conversation, and the year goes in a different route if they're unable to win this game. And Clint, my prediction, I'm with Tyler. Tyler's got it 24-20. I've got it 23-17. I've got the Texans winning. I believe they can still win this division. And if they're going to win this division, they got to win this game. And I'm going to go with them on the road in Jacksonville winning 23-17. How do you see this one going?
I got the Texans losing 17-13. There's just look. I mean, let's not
what was the score you had last week.
What's that?
I think that was the score you had last week.
Yeah, and hell, it was close to hitting if the damn special teams wouldn't have came alive. Like that's the part we got to remember last week, man. You got that special teams, and maybe Frank Ross is the MVP again, and he puts us in position. And I'm wrong. I hope I am, but yeah, I got them losing on the road, 17-13. There's nothing about this offense that makes me think that anything I'm hearing or anything that I'm seeing that makes me think that they're going to be able to go out there and even against a lesser opponent, which I don't know that Jacksonville is much of a lesser opponent, to be honest with you, especially with that defensive front. There's nothing I see, Ron, that tells me they're going to go out there and all of a sudden light up the scoreboard.
Yeah. All right. So you've got them losing here. All right, Clint, I think Tyler gave his best bets, and I'll read them off as he's going college football wise here. Best bets, he's got Utah is a 2.5 point favorite. He has taken Utah to cover that against Texas Tech. He's got South Carolina. South Carolina is a 10-point underdog on the road in Missouri. I think he's got South Carolina there. Michigan State, a plus 19. He at USC in the Coliseum. He's got Michigan State. And Texas is a 40-point favorite against Sam Houston. He is, as he said here, Texas turds. Clint, as you would be surprised, he is taking Sam Houston State to cover. He has taken the under on the total between Oregon State and Oregon, under on 58, and then another matchup between ranked teams, Illinois versus Indiana. He's taken the under on 52.5. There as well. So make some money over the weekend. His weekend bets have been hit. So best bets coming up after we get done. As we get done, a little 3-hour edition of Texans All Access. Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, as they will get you ready for the keys to the matchup coming up in Jacksonville between the Texans and the Jags. So be looking for that. And then you get 10 to midnight, 2 hours of the fellas, Chris Santiago, who has been helping us out, him, Sean Bajani, and Patrick Creighton, Area 45, and I'm certain they will be covering Game 1. Hunter Brown, as he gets the ball, this huge, huge series against the Mariners, they will have the post-game show for that. Let's hope the Astros can come through. All right, for everybody here at Talyards, it's been a great time. Thank you, man, for coming out. Thank you for everybody for coming out. Shout out to Clint. Great job. Good luck there in Arkansas. Shout out to Tyler, Chris Santiago as well. I am Ron the Show, as always, Houston. We love you, baby.
Have a good weekend, good golf, good tennis, or whatever makes you happy.